Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today I'm talking with John Galloway, who is my partner in crime in developer guidance. He's a community program manager. We are working together on the full stack, and John is an expert, although he denies it, in ASP.NET MVC, and is one of the great benefits of working for Microsoft has been becoming, dare I say it, friends with John. John, how are you?
Hey, yeah, it's great to talk to you.
I figured I needed to lead with screaming your name, since that's what we do on the full stack almost.
That's right, because I always have the microphone on mute, and you have to yell 10 times, and then I go, wait, am I unmuted yet?
Wake John, someone poke John. Oh, and John is also the host on Herding Code.
That's true.
A little known podcast. Not particularly, you know, a big podcast, but up and coming. I aspire to your numbers, sir. So you guys have four hosts plus
we do
occasionally guests.
Yeah,
and that must get chaotic.
It does. Yeah, we've had a few shows where we've had like four guests on. And so we'll have the four hosts and four guests, and it can get chaotic. We have, as you know, we record over Skype, and we use the chat window to kind of queue up and take a number. So people kind of, you know, say 1, 2, 3. It's like taking a number at the deli. And then there's usually a person that's kind of designated. We kind of rotate through, and one person will be the MC for the week. And so they'll be typing in the chat, okay, Kevin, you go next, you know, and that kind of thing.
That's how it works so smoothly. I had no idea how you guys met. You seemed like the most polite humans on earth. Nobody talked over one another.
Yeah, and then I edit the shows afterwards. So I go through, and if people do edit, or if people do talk over each other, just naturally, you know, the way that people speak is if two people talk at the same time, someone will repeat themselves and continue on. And so I usually find that that I can just cut out the part where people speak over each other and the conversation flows just fine. So,
well, you have an extraordinary show. You get extraordinary guests.
I've found that it's, you know, we get great recommendations from our listeners for guests. A big benefit of having four hosts on the show is that we get, you know, we have four people feeding in different ideas of who we could talk to. And it's been probably, as you've picked up from your podcast as well, it's the huge benefit is just it's an excuse to talk to a lot of really sharp people on a consistent basis.
This is why I do it. It's really, that is the blast in doing this, is the people that you get to talk to are so much fun. And but you guys, I think one huge advantage that you guys have is that you spread far and wide to all sorts of topics, that many of which didn't seem all that pressing or hot, and then a few months later they are. So I think you guys are always just slightly ahead of the curve.
Well, that's good to hear. That's kind of what we try and shoot for, you know, things that are up and coming. And also we, with our guests, we really try to talk to people who are doing really interesting things and are not part of the general circuit, you know, aren't on the main podcasts, aren't, you know, we try and kind of uncover and talk to people that just you might not stumble across otherwise.
All right. So clearly I need to have a show with the four of you and talk to you about your show. But actually the reason that I asked if you would join me today is to talk about ASP.NET MVC, which I know you are both a fan of and an expert on, and have created a great deal of training material about. So maybe you could help orient us on what ASP.NET MVC 3 is all about.
Sure. I'm thinking about this, all this context right now. I'm working on revising the or updating the ROCKS ASP.NET MVC 2 book for MVC 3. And so I'm thinking about, you know, context and how do you describe it and all that. And, you know, MVC 1 was really just about, here's a new pattern. This is a way of, instead of thinking control first and abstracting away the stateless nature of the web, here we're actually kind of using a pattern where we separate concerns and it's testable and it's something where you can kind of build up larger structures without pain.
I'm going to interrupt you because the Apple guys who are listening just had a coronary when you called it a new pattern. So
right. New, definitely. And that's part of the book, as we talk about the history. It's definitely not new. It's gone back to the 70s, I believe. And you know, also I talk to people who have used MVC in different systems, such as things where they're stateful, you know, and so they expect that MVC works a certain way. And you have to say, well, this is a, you know, this is MVC applied to the stateless web. This is how, you know, if I said that this is, you wouldn't want MVC just blanket applied to the web without some kind of thinking about the context. So I really liked MVC 1. The thing that I saw with it was there was a good amount of code that you had to write. And so MVC 2 addressed some of that. There's templating and there's some things where, you know, some basic scaffolding and helpers. So I found that MVC 2 did the kind of, as is common with Microsoft frameworks, you know, the second and third versions usually cut down a lot of the code. If you look at ASP.NET 2 in general, that was a huge focus there, was going from ASP.NET 1.1 to 2.0. The amount of code you had to write for simple standard tasks was cut way down. So, and then in MVC 3, I see it really kind of maturing in several ways. There's the Razor View engine, which is huge. I'll kind of list through some of my top things, and then we can go in detail if you'd
like. Sounds good.
So there's the Razor View engine. There's just a lot of Ajax enhancements, things that just make JavaScript and jQuery easier to use. There's continued work in model validation, which was a big feature in MVC 2. And then there's some just kind of more pro features like dependency injection, global action filters, and those kind of things that you expect in, as a framework matures, that you see pain points that people hit in advanced scenarios are being addressed here. So
we'll put a link on this page as to where folks can get MVC 3 and update Visual Studio with MVC 3.
What I like to tell people for this, I think it's, I worked with Phil on this release, because before I worked at Microsoft and, you know, as getting started, I just saw the pain point of it's hard to find out what's going on with some of our releases at Microsoft. You have to read all these blog posts and search around. And so Phil and I set up this.
Phil being Phil Hack.
Phil Hack, yeah. So if you go to ASP.NET/MVC, that's kind of the information page about MVC in general. And then if you go to ASP.NET/MVC/MVC3, that gives you everything you need to know about MVC 3. So it includes links to all those blog posts. It includes a link to the installer. It includes an overview, you know, some of the top features, which I'm actually looking at now to make sure I don't miss anything. But so we kind of tried to distill all this information that's spread all over the place and, you know, kind of like a heads-up display on what's going on in it. Also, because MVC does this frequent releases, they don't just say, boom, here it is. There's kind of a, you know, there's preview releases and betas and release candidates. And so in order to keep up with what's going on, we had all that information updated on this page over the release cycle. So.
And interestingly, the links, the people who are writing about MVC 3, in addition to yourself and Phil Hack, Scott Hanselman and Scott Guthrie, I mean, this is getting serious attention from folks who write about the most exciting, cutting edge things that are happening at Microsoft. So this is clearly a high focus area for Microsoft development.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting area to work in. I think also, you know, you look at something like ASP.NET 4 in general, and it's pretty mature. You know, it's been around for a decade, and it's really pretty, it's mature. And so there's you don't expect a lot of, you know, huge exciting updates. Whereas if you look at a version 3 framework like ASP.NET MVC, and just kind of the way that the team works are very, you know, frequent releases and very, very agile. And so there is kind of a lot of energy here. So it is something where I do see a lot of blog posts. And especially, like, if you look at things that Scott Guthrie and Scott Hanselman have been writing about, MVC there's this kind of more agile development ecosystem that's building up here with, you've also got NuGet, you've got Entity Framework Code First. And so that kind of the idea of all this, there's new things showing up all the time that continue to make your work easier. You don't have, you know, things, somebody will write up a cool open source library, they'll put it on NuGet, you can use it today. You know, you don't have to wait until the next release of Visual Studio or .NET or anything like that.
Okay, great. Let's focus a little bit on some of the features, starting with the Razor View Engine. What's that about?
Okay, so the idea is in MVC 1 and 2, there was the ASPX or default view engine. And that's, if you're used to the markup in web forms, that's that exact same kind of markup. And that markup was designed for use inside, you know, use with drag and drop controls and supporting all these display type properties and things like that. And so it worked for views in MVC, but it wasn't an ideal fit. And so the idea, you know, with MVC, you've got your model is just kind of a representation of data or information. Your controller controls the flow. So it responds to a URL, figures out what to do, and returns information to the user. And usually the way it does that is with a view. And a view is a template. So if I want to express, I've got a user or I've got, say, an automobile, and I want to express that automobile information to the user, I'll use a view template for that. And that view may have, it's got HTML markup, it has maybe some JavaScript references, a lot of different things. But it needs to write out, okay, the name of this automobile is, you know, whatever, a Ford, and the year of make was, you know, 82, and all that sort of thing. And so in order to inject that actual data into the view along with the HTML, there's kind of this response.write syntax. So in web forms or ASPX view engine, that was less than percent equals and percent greater than.
Yep.
And so there's just a lot of kind of transitions in and out of, okay, now I'm writing code, now I'm writing HTML, now I'm writing markup. And so what Razor does is inside your HTML, you really look at the page and it looks like HTML. And then in order to inject something, you write the at sign, like in an email address. So you write at model.property, or you could say at datetime.now. And you don't have to escape it. You don't have to say, I'm done writing code, I'm back into HTML. The Razor View Engine sees it's written with the understanding that it's an MVC or a web matrix template engine. And so it automatically detects the transition back into HTML.
And it just works.
It just works. It's really pretty surprising. I mean, it's, you just start using it, and the great thing about it is you don't have to think about it. You just write HTML, and you know, I used to have to fight with, I've got blog posts going back 5 years or more of about like how to escape things inside your markup, you know, or inside a response.write, and it was frustrating to do that. So it's nice to just kind of not even think about it anymore.
Well, it does seem like one of those things that once you've made that transition, there's no going back.
Yeah, exactly. Once it gets simple, then it's frustrating to you know, not use it. So I, as an example, I went through with, probably talk about this in a bit, but with this MVC Music Store tutorial and converted it from MVC 2 to MVC 3. And it was one of those things where, you know, like when you're deleting code and it makes you happy to delete unnecessary code. And it was, I got that exact feeling when I was changing over from the ASPX view engine to the Razor view engine. It was just like, wow, this is just so light and simple and clean. You know, and you could do, this is, there's definitely some inspiration taken from other view engines. There's a, similar to like Ruby on Rails or the Spark view engine. There are other view engines. So there was, you know, the MVC team has been very clear about, you know, look, we looked at what all the different types and things people were doing with view engines, and this is what we came up with. I think they really nailed it.
Another piece that you mentioned was support for JavaScript and jQuery. And how much has that changed with MVC 3?
Well, one big thing was, there's been a transition from the Microsoft Ajax libraries to jQuery completely. And so previously there was the validation used the Microsoft Ajax libraries. And, you know, Microsoft's been very clear about, you know, our direction is to move over to using jQuery and support, you know, it's a great framework. It's used by, you know, not just inside the Microsoft ecosphere. It's used by web developers everywhere, and it's just a great system. So there was a big area with this that there was a change was the move to validation in MVC 3 using jQuery Validate. And so this was a popular validation plugin. And some of the things that are great about it, one is that it uses these data dash attributes, which are, you know, they're called HTML5 data attributes. But that scares some people because they think, well, wait, this isn't going to work in my old browsers and all that. But really, it's working with something that's always been a part of HTML, which is that you can add attributes to your elements. So if you say, you know, data dash, and the validation system in MVC3 includes some other attributes, it'll say like, yes, valid, you know, this is a required field. This is, you know, or this is an email address and here's the regular expression to validate and that kind of thing. So it's very, you know, clean and lightweight. It works on top of this jQuery Validate plugin. It's easy to extend setup.
And let's talk about the relationship for a minute between MVC3 and more traditional web forms. When MVC first came out, the message that I understood was you can happily go on using ASP.NET as you always have, building web forms, or here's another alternative which may appeal to you depending on the kind of project you're building or the kind of aesthetic that you have as a programmer. At this point, if you have stuck with web forms and ASP.NET and not looked at all at MVC, are you falling behind? Is it time now that MVC really is a requirement for ASP.NET developers?
I think it's definitely something as a professional developer working in ASP.NET that you owe it to yourself to have at least a basic understanding of how MVC works and what it offers to you. Because like you're saying, there's circumstances where one will work and be better than the other. There are definitely cases where I do, you know, full day training classes with webcams, and I'll talk to people who are doing web forms development, and they'll say, "Oh, that sounds great. I would use it for this and this and this. But here's my question. I've got this complex backend where I've got, you know, 9 grids, and when I change this dropdown, this does this and this does this. How do I do that in MVC?" And I'll say, "Well, you could, you know, roll up your sleeves and write a good amount of jQuery, or, you know, you could redesign your workflow to something that's kind of more like a website, but I don't see a reason to change that from web forms." So I think that there are cases where, you know, web forms is okay.
Well, let me interrupt you and ask you then right on that point. Are there cases where you would choose to do web form rather than MVC3 when you're building something from scratch, not something that already exists, but you're starting new? Are there places where you would say, you know, web forms are a better fit here?
One place for that is depending on, you know, if you've got a team that generally works with web forms, I would see cases where there are some things where there's just some simplicity to staying with that. I think that there are some cases where things like, you know, you can hook up a grid, point it at a database, use a query extender for filtering and be done in seconds. Whereas there is a little bit more setup in, you know, writing a controller, figuring out how things are going to work, setting up, you know, if you're going to do grids and all that. However, I think that the balance of where you start to see greater productivity with MVC is, you know, as soon as you start to maintain the applications. If you're doing anything that you're going to extend and maintain, I think that once you get to know MVC, MVC is going to work better for you.
Okay, John, that was incredibly carefully put.
But what I have to be careful. People get worked up about this stuff.
Well, what I walk away with is that if you're doing anything non-trivial, you owe it to yourself to be moving over to MVC.
I did
hear the other half. Barring legacy code and legacy skills, mm-hmm. that at this point, if you're building an enterprise application or even set aside an enterprise application, a non-trivial application, even an application where you have one programmer building for one client a significant business application in ASP.NET, the maintainability, the testability, the flexibility of MVC, it sounds to me like you find that totally compelling.
My personal opinion is that I would do pretty much everything. It's hard for me to think about circumstances where web forms would be a better fit for me, having learned MVC. You know, I want to be careful to, you know, say all the standard Microsoft disclaimers. There's still, you know, investment and support in web forms, and it still works and all that. So this is really kind of my personal opinion there, but I really do like working with MVC, and I do find that the long-term, just the structure of an MVC application makes it easier to stay out of trouble. The kind of trouble I would get into with web forms. I think the one thing that I would say with all that is you owe it to yourself. If you don't know MVC, you owe it to yourself to at least have some basics down.
So good. So let's talk about learning MVC. And the first thing, before we get to your tutorial, I want to ask you about the books that are out right now, which are all, at least the last time I looked, the only books that are currently available are MVC 2. If I want to learn MVC, let's say I'm a web form developer or a .NET developer, and I want to learn MVC 3, is a book on MVC 2 going to do it for me, or is that obsolete and I should be waiting for an MVC 3 book?
Well, MVC 3 builds on MVC 2. So, I mean, the structure, I really do think that the guys on the MVC team did a great job at the beginning because they set up a very clean architecture that, you know, they can continue to layer simplicity on without breaking changes. So they're very, very minimal breaking changes between versions. So I don't think that it's any kind of waste of time to learn MVC 2. And that those skills are all transferable to MVC 3, although there are some, you know, things that just have gotten easier with MVC 3. So, for instance, going from MVC 1 to 2, if you learned validation in MVC 1, there was a lot of hand coding, whereas in MVC 2, you just put some attributes on things and it just works. So with MVC 3, there's a little less of that because the Razor View engine is not like this big dramatic new thing to learn.
But the actual Razor View part of it would not be in any of the MVC 2 books.
That's true, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, the books that are out there right now, there's the Rocks one that I've worked on with Phil Hack, and it's, you know, the original one was included Phil and Scott Hanselman, Scott Guthrie, Rob Connery. So that one's out there. There's also Steve Sanderson's book, which is very popular. There's MVC in Action. They're all in the process of updates right now for MVC 3. I think that, you know, this is my one gripe with the MVC team is they just release so fast. So, you know, we just finished the MVC 2 book and then all of a sudden here's MVC 3. So we're definitely, like I was saying, we're working on the MVC 3 updates. There's a lot of online information right now. So I think the best place to go for, if you're a person that reads, that learns best reading a book, I would recommend go out and grab an MVC 2 book or wait till the summer when I think we'll get all those MVC 3 books.
But in the interim, and when I asked you about learning it myself, you pointed me to the ASP.NET MVC Music Store tutorial, which is, in fact, for MVC 3.
That's true.
And this tutorial, now, when I write a tutorial, as opposed to a mini tutorial, I go up to, a good 20, 25, this is 139, no, it's 146 pages of tutorial. This is a mini book, John. I don't know how to break it to you.
It's take three of that book in just about a year. So, you know, because we wrote version one and it was good, and that it was 85-ish pages, and then we did version two, which just describes some things in more detail. It's for this kind of tutorial. It's the kind of thing where people do step by step by step. And you need to, you know, things need to be spelled out in order so that it makes sense to somebody who's completely new to it. And so,
so let's start there. What are the assumptions about the skills of somebody reading your tutorial?
Well, first of all, the context of this tutorial, if you go to, like I was saying before, ASP.NET/MVC, then there are two step-by-step tutorials that are featured there. So there's one, which is build your first ASP.NET MVC3 application. And this is kind of more that 30-page, you can do this in, you know, couple hours tutorials. And this is Scott Hanselman worked on this, some other guys on the MSDN team. This is a kind of simpler, quick to get started one. It does teach you the, it teaches using NuGet. It uses Entity Framework code first, but it's not a lot of assumptions as far, you know, this is maybe something where you, you give it to your smart nephew and he works through it without any background. Then the ASP.NET MVC Music Store is more, it starts slow, but it really kind of takes off. So at the beginning, you know, it says, okay, make sure you have this installed. Here we're going to, you know, right-click, add new controller, shows a lot of screenshots. And it does take off because even with 150-ish pages, to cover all the things we're covering in this tutorial, we've got membership, we've got, well, of course, everything to do with MVC, we've got handling views and view models, we've got data annotations for validation, we've got membership, we've got Ajax, and, you know, just the things of building a music store. And also, you know, some styling and theming of the site. So I would recommend if for somebody that's completely new or doesn't know web programming at all, I would start with that first one, the Hanselman one, build your first ASP.NET MVC3 application. And then the music store is maybe a follow-on to that. If somebody's familiar with web forms, I would hope that they would be able to complete the music store without, you know, without too many problems. And then also we have pretty active discussions and issue tracker. I try and keep up and answer questions on that as they come in as quickly as possible. And we also do have, you know, people helping each other out on those. So it's, you know, and as I keep revising the tutorial, I follow what things are giving people trouble. And it's really helpful to kind of go back to that place of, you know, being completely new with the technology and seeing, you know, I said do this and this, and that's obvious to me, but it's not to somebody who's not familiar with this. And another way to learn about MVC is to check out the videos for MVC Conf. So that was a free virtual online conference that we ran February 8th, and we had speakers from the product team. We had Scott Guthrie and Phil Hack and Brad Wilson. We also had a lot of, you know, community leaders and people that are out doing MVC in the field every day in their job. And so they were talking about what works for them. And so these are all up. You can go to MVCconf.com. And we've got videos there. You can also find them on Channel 9. There's a series, channel9.msdn.com/series MVCconf.
Well, I got to ask you about that conference before you drop that, because as I remember, when you were talking about it before the conference, you were expecting a certain level of participation and viewers that was just swamped by the reality of how many people have downloaded those and listened to that and participated.
Yeah, it's crazy. We the original MVC Conf that we did last summer, we had about 500 people throughout the day that were logged on, which was pretty good, you know. And so then we said, okay, well, for this next one, let's try and expand the capacity so as many people as want to show up can make it. So we did that by having two different presentation types. We had live meetings. We had a total of 27 sessions. And so all but six of those were live meetings. And so those were presented by just people all over the place, community leaders and stuff. And so those can hold up to 1,250 people each. And then we had a live streaming track that was filmed in Channel 9 Studios, and that could hold as many people as showed up. So we actually did capacity planning just in case, you know, something ridiculous happens. Can we afford the bandwidth? Because it was this wasn't a Microsoft conference. This was a community-run conference run by sponsors. So, but yeah, during the day we had, you know, roughly 10,000 people viewing these, and then, which is amazing. That was, we were thinking, you know, get a couple thousand people, we're doing great. So we had like, you know, 10,000. But then what's even crazier is afterwards, we just keep watching the viewership go up. And the last I checked, it was like 350,000.
Oh, good Lord. Views.
But I think, I mean, I'm looking at the numbers now. Just the Scott Guthrie keynote alone had 55,000 views.
Well, MVC3 clearly has a lot of folks very, very excited. What's the status of MVC3 now? Is it a released product?
It is released. Yeah, it was released, I think January 13th. It was with the same wave of all the, you know, everything that came out with Web Matrix. So, and then also if you get the Visual Studio SP1 via the web platform installer, the recommended installer there also bundles it. So you get MVC3 there. So it's a very, you know, it's a lightweight install. It takes a little bit longer because there's some Visual Studio tooling, but it's pretty, you know, simple, keeps to itself, doesn't, you know, you can still, on one machine, you can do, you know, without any trouble, you can do web forms development. You can have MVC2 and MVC3 installed.
And Silverlight.
Exactly,
and
exactly. So it's...
So it's not right, getting in the exactly. way. Well, I can't thank you enough. Clearly, we're going to need to do another episode in which we talk about the full stack because there's a lot of exciting stuff going there. But this was great. This was just
tremendous. Yeah, great. Fun talking to you about it, Jesse.